The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Hamoudou, and welcome to Health Chat. Did you know that the state of your romantic relationship can impact your physical health? Whether you are married or dating, are you fulfilled in your relationship? Or do you feel like it could be better? Experts say when a person is fulfilled in a relationship, he or she can handle better the stress of life and overall be more productive. On today's program, we will discuss love and relationship therapy and try to answer your questions about challenges and ways to improve your relationship with your mate. Joining us via phone from Ottawa, Canada, is Dr. Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist, researcher, and author of the book Love's Sense. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the show.
Very pleased to be here.
It's so great to have you joining us from Canada. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Great. Also joining us for the conversation via phone from Philadelphia is Dr. Latisha Webb. Dr. Webb possesses over 12 years of experience as a human services practitioner and is a developer of multiple curricula, including Demystifying Sexuality and the Impact of Trauma. Dr. Webb, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you on Health Chat today. Let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the program with your question or comment, you can call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1, and you can ask your international operator to reverse those charges if you are calling us from overseas. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will start discussing love therapy in a moment. But first, Vienna Mbagaya is a young Kenyan-American social entrepreneur based in Washington, D.C. She says, even though she is not a relationship expert, well, here is what she thinks makes a relationship work.
I think I would start with friendship. Like you said before, whether it's romantic or platonic, you want that friendship and all the tenets that come with friendship, like respect, you know, being able to give the other person freedom and independence, a lot of humor, I think, and a lot of communication.
What often leads to a breakdown in relationship? Why do people break up?
I think people break up because of their own individual personalities or, you know, just what motivates them. If someone is fearful to, you know, love unconditionally, then they're bound to want to run away or kind of be abrasive with their partner, and they won't be willing to be vulnerable and communicate. So I think communication is a big one. When you cannot be honest and communicate your true feelings without worrying about your pride or winning a conversation, winning an argument, that matters too. And another one is trust. You know, when trust is broken, how do you work on that? How do you get it back? How do you truly move on and forgive and forget? And those are things that I think you can work together in a relationship, but it's also very important that you know how to work it out on your own, separately from your partner.
Every relationship obviously has a beginning and an end, unfortunately.
All of mine have an end, so I understand.
and so there's going to be some sort of heartbreak. People's feelings are going to be hurt. But life has to go on, right? What do you do to rebound from a broken relationship?
My gosh, and I am the most emotional person ever, and I love it. I do it for attention, and just kidding. But I'm a very emotional person, which means if I'm going through a negative feeling, I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of going through sadness or whatever any kind of feeling brings, because I think humans are ephemeral. They are. They come and go. And however visceral or trivial, they come and go. So if let's say you were a breakup and you're heartbroken, just let it happen. Let it come take over you, and, you know, you're going to feel all those things. And don't block it. I think when you fight it and when you block something, it's like you're going against the grain. And that's when either it hurts more or it just, you know, if you fight it off, it'll come back and manifest itself in a different way. You'll project it. So, and that's not the kind of energy you want to project. So I believe in feeling things all the way out. No shortcuts, no avoidance. Let it happen.
You know, eat the chocolate, the ice cream, cry.
Yeah, I mean, when it was happening in the beginning and everything was amazing, you were open to every possibility.
Right.
So now that it's...
Every,
you know,
emotional arc.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, if it breaks, you're thinking, how do I block this?
How do I get out of here?
I don't want bad feeling.
There's no need for that. I think the same way we anticipate positive things, we should have a healthy way of anticipating negative, long struggles.
And that was our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, speaking with Vienna Umbagaya. Let me start with you, Dr. Webb, and have your reaction on what we just heard. She spoke about many things that make a good relationship. From her perspective, communication, trust, and so on and so forth. If you were to sum up what makes a good relationship, what would you say? Dr. Webb?
Yes, thank you so much. I believe that a good relationship begins with self-love. I mean, everything begins with us as individual people. And there's an old saying that you cannot transfer what you do not have. So if you don't have self-love and begin there, then how can you possibly begin to love another person?
That's a very, very good point. You cannot transfer what you do not have. That's something for me to take a note today. Me and our listeners, everyone has to note this. Dr. Jack Danson, let's talk about the aspect of love and relationship that some experts say has an impact on our physical well-being, our health. Are there evidence-based research that demonstrate the correlation of love on a person's health and physical well-being? You are a researcher. Have you worked on such topics?
Yes, there's a lot of wonderful research that's really been going in the last 20 years that I tried to summarize in my book, Love Sense. What's interesting is it's all pointing in the same direction. We're starting to understand the profound impact of the quality of your relationship on your mental and physical health, on your ability to deal with stress, on your self-confidence, your ability to perform. It's really very profound, but let me just give you a couple that really sort of would strike the listeners. For example, Louise Hawkley has found that if you feel emotionally isolated, and there's nothing more painful than being in a relationship where all your needs for connection are kind of being triggered and not being able to feel connected with your partner. If you feel emotionally isolated, you're 2 to 3 times more likely to have a stroke or a heart attack, and you're less likely to recover from that heart attack and be doing well in a few years' time. If you're having very negative interactions with your partner, hostile interactions, basically what that does is it down-regulates your immune system. And if I put little wounds on your hands, this is a woman called Kelcott Glasser who in Ohio, if I put little wounds on your hands with suction cups and you have one of those fights with your partner, your wounds take much longer to heal. We understand the impact. We're bonding animals who are wired for connection. Our brains are wired for it, and we need this connection to keep our emotional and physical, physiological balance. And so when things go wrong in a relationship, it most definitely has health consequences. And when we are alone and can't find a way to connect, it has health consequences. The positive thing is that if you have good, positive, loving relationship, what I tell people when I stand up and talk is, that's an amazing, it's like taking a health pill. I say things like, sure, go to the gym, sure, give up smoking and take care of your diet. But actually, the evidence is that being able to reach for your partner and have loving connection is probably better than any of those things for your health.
That's a very good point. And I know that we are mainly focusing on love relationships today, but I wanted to expand a little bit on what you just said as you talk about how the type of love that we have with our mates can impact our physical well-being. What about... is this true for any other types of relationship? Let's say, for example, you work with a coworker that drives you crazy. You have your neighbor. Every time you see your neighbor, he says something that upsets you or you just don't like. Is that type of relationship also, does it have an impact on our physical well-being?
I think I think the research is, it has an impact, but the bottom line is we're not just social animals, we're bonding animals, and the evidence is that it's really the people that you have this deep emotional connection with, that you create kind of a safe haven with, that you can call when you're upset, that you turn to in distress, that when they hold you, it soothes your nervous system. These are the people that really have the impact. You can get irritated with your neighbor, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure that's really going to, you know, have any huge or lasting impact, whereas the quality of your relationship with the person you turn to, who have this attachment bond with, which, by the way, is, it is a friendship, but it's a whole lot more than that.
Yes.
And, you know, they are the people that are really going to impact our health for the better or for the worse.
Okay. Now, when we, Dr. Webb, and this is directed to you, when we talk about being in a relationship where you fulfill someone and someone fulfills you, to what extent does a person have to become herself or himself, stay the way he is to be accepted by the other? Do we have, because we hear a lot that, you know, your mate should accept you the way you are. To what extent do you need to change or adjust to ensure that your relationship will be healthy for the both of you,
Well, that's a very interesting question, because the title of my book is The Authentic Love Experience: Pillow Talk Topics for Couples Who Desire a Holistic Relationship. And the premise of the book is about the authentic self and understanding that we live life on six dimensions. And those six dimensions are spiritual, psychological, emotional, sexual, physical, and social. And so when we understand that we are multidimensional beings, and we experience life on all of these dimensions concurrently, then we can understand the impact that life has on us individually. So when you're talking about being in an intimate relationship, and when you have gained the self-awareness that you live life on six dimensions, then you begin to live in the realm where you want to meet your partner on all six dimensions. You know, we talk about pheromones and we talk about, you know, the initial attractiveness. But once you get past the initial attractiveness, there is five other dimensions that we want to meet our partners on. And so if you are already in the process of self-development, then you understand that once you meet a partner that can understand you and vibe and live where you live on your six dimensions, then it shouldn't be a problem with changing and making adjustments, because life is transformative. And our partners are mirrors to us. They reflect who we are. And so when you are in a relationship with another person that you feel like you are in love with and you make a commitment to be with for the rest of your life, if you already understand the journey of self-discovery and self-transformation, then it shouldn't be a problem with changing. And again, these changes are with someone that has met you on all six dimensions of life.
Very interesting. We have a question from that we receive on our email on Facebook, and this is Mary in South Africa. She wants to know, is it possible for someone to be incapable of love? Dr. Johnson, is there such a thing?
Oh, that's interesting. My understanding is, from all the recent research on bonding, you could say it's impossible for somebody, for all kinds of reasons, to be able to be open enough to other people and responsive enough to other people to really make the emotional connection that is the core of love. You could say that. My sense of that is there are some of us who, usually it's about the fact that we have been so traumatized, perhaps as children, we have learned, unfortunately, that close connection with other people is dangerous to us, mm-hmm. and we basically numb out, or we're so alarmed by that closeness that we spend all our time dealing with those difficult feelings. If I'm dealing with very difficult feelings all the time, it's almost like I don't even have the mental space to be able to look up and look into your face and really tune into what you're feeling. So I think the kind of connection that we know that is the heart of good human bonding requires a certain amount of openness and responsiveness. People can learn it. They learn it in our research projects. You know, we've got 15 outcome studies right now over the last 30 years, and we get the best results of any couples therapy in the world. And we know that people can learn it. We know it for sure. We've shown it again and again. But I think for some people, that openness and that willingness to risk and that willingness to connect is very, 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 very difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all we do if we meet folks like that is try to give them every chance we can. We help them understand love, because at this point in the last 15 years, we really have cracked the code of love. We really do understand what it's about. Mm-hmm. And we help them understand it. And that makes it less scary, less dangerous. But, yeah, you know, naturally we think of closeness with other people in terms of safety and comfort, but if you've been through enough trauma, if you've never experienced other people as being there for you, as coming when you call, if in fact you've experienced other people will take your vulnerability and use it, yeah, yes. Then it's really difficult and risky, and you know, your whole neural network is going to go crazy, send you alarm signals when other people get close.
Definitely.
So it's more difficult for some of us than from others. Mm-hmm. But I think the longing for it is wired in.
Yeah.
I don't think you can erase that. I think that's wired into our brain by millions of years of evolution. The longing's there, but the ability to act on it and actually let someone else in and risk, I think that's very hard for some folks.
It's really taking a chance, really, to open yourself to falling in love and being in a relationship. And Dr. Webb, I actually wanted you to comment on this, because Dr. Johnson talked about trauma. And the impact of trauma is something that you work extensively as well in your work and counseling. Can you tell us about a little more about that and what you see in your practice?
Definitely. So when you're dealing with trauma in relationships, you know, you're actually, and everything that Dr. Seuss stated is right on the money. You know, we have affect modulation that we have to address every day, whether you have experienced trauma or not. And because relationships involve all six dimensions, particularly our emotional dimension, if you are unhealthy emotionally, just dealing with life on life's terms, and then you step into the realm of being in an intimate relationship with someone else, like I said, that person is a mirror unto you. So everything that is going on within you will manifest on the outside. And I tell people all the time, your world is not the external physical environment. Your world is what's going on within you psychologically and emotionally. That's the world that you live in. And so if you're living within a victim paradigm, within a fearful paradigm, if all of your emotions are negative, anger, bitterness, resentment, then how can you enter into a healthy relationship? And remember, it goes back to my opening statement, we cannot transfer what we do not have. And so if you have bitterness and anger, then you're going to transfer bitterness and anger into that intimate relationship. And so it's very, very important that if we have experienced trauma, for us to do the real work.
Okay.
I mean, it takes courage to heal from trauma. But mm-hmm. the awesome thing about it is that being in an intimate relationship helps you heal at a deeper level, just like Dr. Sue stated. You know, when you're in that comforting, bonding, affirming relationship, you're able to get those deep inner healing, you know, within the tissues and the bone and marrow of your very being. But when you do not have those relationships, then your healing is only at a certain point, because it's something called skin hunger. And so it's only an intimate partner can touch me in a certain way that can heal a wound that's so deep that I didn't even know that was there, that I can't even put words to. So, yes, it's very, very important for us to deal with our trauma. And some aspects of trauma cannot be healed unless we give it to an intimate relationship.
Okay, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Webb, we will continue the discussion. We have to take a short break. And when we come back, we have some questions coming in. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America, Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute show at 1730 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is love therapy. Joining us via phone from Ottawa, Canada, is Dr. Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist and author of the book Love Sense. And also joining us via phone is Dr. Letitia Webb. She's joining us from Philadelphia. And ladies, again, thank you for joining us this evening to discuss this very, very interesting topic. We have a question with from Jan, and he sends us a question on Facebook. He says, is love a necessary component to a healthy life? we would like to take this question.
My response is, Dr. Sue, you can go ahead and I'll follow up.
Yes, of course it is. The bottom line is we're bonding animals when our brain is being formed. When we're small, if we call and no one comes, we die. And that is a given. I mean, we're bonding animals. Connection with other people is like oxygen for us. We're not wired to deal with isolation. We're very bad at it. I mean, in fact, we call isolation cruel and unusual punishment in our penal system. We use it as a form of torture. It unhinges our minds. It pushes us into emotional chaos and panic. You know, other people are incredibly important to us on every level you can imagine. So love, if you're talking about that emotional connection where I know that if I call, someone will come, that I'm not alone in the universe, that kind of bond is essential to us. That doesn't have to be a romantic bond. It can be a bond with a parent, a bond with a fantastically good life friend. Some people have that kind of connection with their God. But I think everyone knows what you're talking about if you say that we all need this sense that there's another being who sees us, who will respond to us, who will give us a sense of safe haven and connection, who's a refuge and a source of strength. The evidence is we're much stronger as people dealing with stress, and also we feel much better about ourselves when we have someone who will respond to us. We're not wired to live alone. Our society is very individualistic, but the bottom line is we're built physiologically for community and for intimate connection with a few significant others. So, yes, I think absolutely love is essential for any kind of fulfilled life.
Okay. And actually, I have a question here that I would like to read to you ladies, because it seems to be so typical of many, many couples. And this is coming from Ferima. She writes to us from London. She says, "My husband and I have been living like roommate for the past 2 years. After 10 years of marriage, we barely speak and have not been intimate for the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. I tried what I could, but there is no change. What should I do?" Dr. Johnson, I think you have some steps, some therapies that you advise couples. In this case, what can she do?
Well, I think, first of all, what might encourage her and give her hope is that we really understand love much better than we did, and we understand what goes wrong. Probably what's happening, which happens to lots of couples, is they don't really know how to... They don't know the impact they're having on each other. They don't know, for example, that your brain responds to criticism by someone you depend on in exactly the same way as it responds to physical pain and danger. People don't know the impact they're having on their partner. And often they get caught in feeling disconnected and lonely, and that sort of almost is like an inflammation that turns into conflict. They don't know how to ask for what they need. Often they don't even know what they need, because we haven't understood love very well. And they often what happens is one person starts pushing for connection, demanding or getting upset, getting angry, and they look dangerous to the other person. The other person shuts down more and withdraws. As the other person shuts down, the first person feels even more disconnected and alone. And suddenly you get this horrible patterns happening of demanding and withdrawing, or even mutual withdrawal, because it hurts so much to try and connect and either feel criticized or rejected or shut out. That hurts, literally hurts. The evidence is that hurts. It's the same reaction in the brain. People don't know what's going on, the dance just takes over their relationship. But we know you can handle that. You can handle it. There's a book, I think the ladies in the UK, there was a book I wrote a few years ago called Hold Me Tight that might help her to read, which shows how she can start to have different kinds of conversations with her partner.
Okay, so Dr. Johnson, if you were to give one or two main steps very quickly, what would you say she should do? What would be, let's say, the first step she should take?
I think she should tell her husband that she feels lonely and upset in the relationship, and that even if she's showing anger, she's feeling upset to be so separate from him.
Okay.
And she should ask her husband if he would do something with her, like read Love Sense together, there's exercises in the book, or even go and find some consultation.
Okay.
We have therapists in England. Our therapy is called EFT. It's
okay.
All over the world.
Okay, and unfortunately, we're running out of time. We will have more information about your practice and Dr. Webb's on our website. But before we finish, Dr. Webb, I wanted to ask you, because this is a question, we've received many questions in this topic, but we don't have enough time. Very quickly, in the case of infidelity, what would be the first step you will tell a husband or a wife to make toward resolving it?
I think each person has to make their own decision of if they want to remain in the relationship. Once you know exactly what you want and what you are willing, then you can approach the relationship. But I would not approach the topic of infidelity without first doing a self-assessment. But if I can look at my partner in the face every day, if I can move beyond this point in our relationship,
okay.
But if you cannot answer that, then you should not approach the question until you're able to do so.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sue Johnson, Dr. Webb. Thank you, ladies, for joining us today. It was a great conversation. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you. And I'm your host, Linong Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vungani. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.